know, strafing, because there were still, we still had anti-aircraft guns, a few of our own planes, and so it was all high-level bombing.
Did the fascists dominate the air at that time?
Yes, our fighters came over from time to time, and when they came over, the fascists cleared off. But the domination of the air was perhaps 90% fascist.
And was that a crucial factor in the battle?
Yes, it certainly played a part. At the early stage, not so much in the front line, but in the stage of preventing our forces being reinforced with men and supplies and material.
So they got the supply columns coming up.
And the attack, in fact, took place through a very narrow front, and the whole base of the attack was not widened because of the opposition on the flanks. That was not the responsibility of the 15th Brigade, but the plan, I understand, was to widen the breakthrough so that it would have been possible to reinforce and supply the forward troops. That, in fact, became impossible.
So were you in danger of being cut off?
There was this danger of encirclement all the time, and as the fascist counterattack developed, this danger became greater.
When you say a very narrow front, how wide was the front? Can you remember?
Oh, it was probably... I'm speaking now about the base of the front, where we broke through the original fascist lines. Again, I wouldn't like to say, but it was probably only a matter of 5 miles, which of course is within artillery range, and certainly not wide enough to prevent you being nipped off if there had been a counterattack at the pincher point which the fascists could have made. Yeah. In fact, they decided their counterattack was largely a frontal one. And that was because we were within the forward infantry units in the British Battalion were within, well, a few yards, some people have said 12 yards, of the top of Mosquito Ridge. If we'd been able to take that, then we would have been in the commanding height and therefore in an advantage to push down towards Madrid. And it was possible at certain periods of the day to see the outlying buildings of Madrid in the distance.
How much of the front, you say it's about a 5 mile front, you thought, how much of that did the British Battalion occupy, did that cover?
Well, I'm speaking now only from my personal experience, and again I want to emphasize that we were not with the battalion.
Yes.
We were fighting on a brigade front.
Yes.
And at times our three guns were as much as half a mile to a mile apart, able to give this helpful fire and to deal with any tanks if they had in fact come over. But in fact, no tanks were used in that particular sector. It wasn't very suitable. But we did, as I say, fire with very great effect against attacking groups of the fascists.
Yeah. Okay, fine. When the counter-offensive started, the nationalist counter-offensive, what happened to cause the retreat of the Republic?
Well, first of all, our forces were tired, very tired. The Republic undoubtedly had insufficient reserves so that, for example, the British battalion had been involved in active fighting all the way from Villanueva right up to Mosquito Ridge, and had suffered casualties both in the battle and as well from the dysentery, which was really having a devastating effect at the time. So we were pushed back by overwhelming weight of numbers, and the fact that a sector of the front would break and then the other battalions would have to be drawn back to prevent them being encircled or caught in flanking fire.
Can you remember seeing the Nationalists actually advancing towards you?
Oh, very definitely. That was when I was deafened, as I say. I was standing with this gun crew and standing slightly in front and was saying, over there to the left or over there to the right, as we saw, a group of men, platoon strength, 30 strong, would get up and run forward. And the gunners, our people who were on the guns, were doing an extremely good job, rapidly swiveling, adjusting the sights, and one shell would, we could actually see bodies flying apart, but then everybody else would then flop on the ground and wouldn't move. But because the one gun I was with, and which was one of the, well, almost the final breakthrough, we just could not sort of do enough to keep all the fascists with their heads down.
So then you were ordered to pull back?
Yes, then we pulled back. And again, a little story. This was with these guns coming down the hill. In a way, we had more control going up a hill. And there was one occasion when we were taking the gun over a small dip, and the men, of course, on the ropes behind, A, didn't want to slow it down too much because it helped them up the next little bump. So they began to run, and there was a group of troops coming down, saw us run, and they began to run as well back. So we had to stop and attempt to explain that we weren't running to get away. We were running only because it was very difficult to control the gun when you were going downhill. Yeah. However, we then made our way back through darkness and withdrawn behind the line.
And you were pushed back to your original...
Yes, yeah. On the mountainside.
Just wanted to... Sorry.
Oh, well, I was going on to the next stage.
Well, I was going to... If we just stop on that, yeah. Anyway. What did you have to eat whilst you were up at the front? Can you remember?
Well, it was very little. It arrived very irregularly, and it was cold all the time. It was stew, a little bit of bread, and coffee. Occasionally, we got a very little bit of wine, but it was stew, a little bit of bread, and cold coffee.
And how often a day would you have this?
Well, once a day, and occasionally there'd be something else brought up as well. But if you like, one meal a day was the most common.
So you were hungry most of the time?
Yes, you were hungry. You were able to keep going, but you dreamt of food and you talked of food. And
from where you were, presumably you could... Brigade headquarters would be somewhere behind you.
Yes.
How far away would that be, approximately?
Well, It varied according to the positions of our guns. It might have been 300-400 yards, occasionally half a mile. But
so still fairly close to the front.
Oh yes, very close to the front, yes.
And battalion headquarters even closer?
Yes, oh yes, yes.
I see. Now, that particular battle, Brunetti, Copeman was wounded, in fact, wasn't he? Do you remember that happening? Or?
No, I mean, I heard he was wounded. Nathan was killed.
That's right, yes.
Yes, and, but as I say, we were, if you like, part of of the brigade.
There was a fairly standing funeral for Abe King, so I've read.
Yes.
Was that the case? Were you there?
No, I wasn't there, but again, I heard about it. That was
for Nathan, rather, and Aiken read the funeral oration. Did you actually meet Nathan at all? I mean, did you see him at all?
Oh yes, I saw him, and
was he the splendid sort of thing?
Oh
that
yes,
people talk
the
about?
Description of him were correct. He was always neat and tidily dressed. He always seemed to find enough water to usually shave, and was generally debonair and bright in his appearance.
And he was the inspiration for people saying?
Yes, he was certainly sort of never demoralised, but equally you could say the same about Chopich or other people around the brigade headquarters.
Just one final thing. The 15th Brigade under Chopich was part of the 18th Army Corps, is that right?
Of the 35th Division. Beyond going up to Army Corps, I cannot, you know, I certainly didn't know. In fact,
You were part of the 35th Division?
Yes.
I see. Yeah. And who was... that was under Gow, wasn't it? Divisional commander?
Now, I'd have to check this, whether it was Gow or whether Walter had already taken over.
I see. Yeah. And who was in charge of the 15th then? Was the 15th involved in that battle?
The
15th Division.
Well, again, I can only find that out from, you know,
yes.
I can't quote.
Okay, right.
It's in history, and it's certainly not my personal recollection.
There were quite a lot of deaths, in fact, in that battle, wasn't it? It was a very costly battle.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Okay, after that battle, wasn't there an incident with Aitken and Klaus, a German guy who wasn't he chief of staff of
yeah,
the brigade?
Yeah.
Didn't they complain, I heard that, to Gal, or either Gal or Walter, about returning to the battle? Wasn't there some mention of that?
Well, the 15th Brigade was withdrawn to the mountain behind, and we were then in a state of exhaustion. I personally have, again, one of these little memories. We finally lay down to sleep, and the whole world was rocking round me as I went to sleep. It was a nightmarish sleep. But then there was an order, because the front was breaking, that the 15th Brigade, what was left of it, should go back to the line. But in fact, I would be prepared to accept that there were sharp exchanges whether it was possible or not. But as far as the anti-tank battery is concerned, we got ready and we were prepared to go back. Mm-hmm. What was left of us.
Had the anti-tank battery suffered many casualties?
Yes, we'd suffered quite heavily. Malcolm Dunbar, I told you, was wounded. There was a very fine miner from Kent named Black who'd been killed. A number of Spanish comrades had been killed. And we'd probably lost about a third of our 26 or 28 people.
Yeah. And what was the... Do you remember anything about the incident with the 13th Brigade when they had tanks and the assault of police sent against them?
No.
Do you remember anything? No, I don't.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're pulled back to the hill,
yes,
and you're not sent back into line again.
No, probably the situation stabilised.
Okay. So, can we just leave it?
And the whole brigade, of course, was sent back. And for the anti-tank battery, there was an idyllic period. We were on a little island in a river where there was a mill house that used to make the flock for blankets. And we lived on this island surrounded by cool, rushing streams. It was cool, it was pleasant, it was heaven. But there were two things there. Miles Tomalin took over the two-roomed mill house and made it into a cultural centre and began to issue what was termed assault and battery news. A wallpaper which he changed perhaps twice a week. And it was of a very high level. He was an extremely capable writer. This was a field of work in which he felt at home. And the whole battery, sort of relaxed and grew happy in this surrounding. There was another incident there which helped me to understand the poverty of the average Spanish peasant. The Spanish lads realized that by dropping a sluice, they could drain one of these channels from which the water came from the mill. Now, to us, it would have been a muddy channel, but they grovelled round it and came out with a whole number of very small fish, crayfish, which they then cooked into a most delicious stew. They'd also caught a whole lot of sparrows, and the whole battalion had an unusual but still memorable feast of the products of their sort of knowledge of what life there was. Then I was approached, would I go to the battalion? And I went to the battalion as the adjutant. And Fred Copeman was still in command at the time. We had a short period of training there. I've jumped over a period. but that didn't happen there, it happened later on there. Right. When we left Ambiti, we then went up to the Aragon Front, when we attacked Pearl Barrel Hill and then later Kinto and Belchite. And in Belchite, we again, the anti-tanks really came into their own. The fascists, which had been completely surrounded, were holding the church as a strong point and the centre of a whole system of interconnected houses with holes battered between the walls so that they could retreat down the street, in the street fighting, towards this central target, the church. We took our guns right into the Belchite, pushing them up behind the sandbag barricades which the fascists had left behind, poked our muzzles through, and were able to fire either armor-piercing or high-explosive shells directly at the church, and undoubtedly played a part in the collapse, in the final fascist surrender.
Mm-hmm. Presumably, after the retreat from Brunetti, there's a reasonable degree of moral demoralization. I mean, not in the sense of personally, but you feel a little fed up of having to pull back. Is that right?
Well, there was both extreme exhaustion and a certain sense of defeat, in the sense that a big offensive had, in fact, not achieved its objective. There certainly was some people who were demoralized, but I'm speaking now about the anti-tank, which we were still this small, sort of rather elite unit, and we, so there was certainly no degree of demoralization.
Why do you think, just before we continue on with Belchite, why do you think in places like Brunetti that the Republican side had to retreat eventually? Why did their attacks fail so often?
Well, they had to retreat. The main reason was the overwhelming artillery and bombing which they had to face, and the fact that they still had insufficient reserves to consolidate and then expand their initial victory. I mean, this was still in the early days when many of the Spanish battalions were still raw, badly led, and not yet consolidated into a serious army, if you like. It was still going on all the time. It was a process of growth, if you like.
After Brunetti, you pull back from there. Presumably then the front stabilised around Brunetti, is that right?
And it did not change again till the end of the war, till the very end of the war.
But within 2 weeks of the end of that, you were off fighting again at Belchite.
Yes, we moved off again. It may have been 2-3 weeks, but it happened. We then moved up to the Aragon front, that is, on the approaches of Saragossa. The idea was to break through towards Saragossa.
Had the British, but you were still at that point with the anti-tank battery.
I was still with the anti-tank battery.
Did you know if the British battalion had been reinforced by that point? Because it lost a lot of Brunetti.
Yes, we'd heard stories, but again, we were... I'm sorry to emphasise again, we were brigade troops. And we, although we met the British battalion socially, we sort of bumped into one another, we knew what was happening, yet it wasn't, if you like, our experience.
Yeah. You also presumably have been supplied with replacements yourselves.
Yes, yes.
Were these English people who'd come out?
We received a few English, but we also received a higher proportion of Spaniards.
And who were the who was brigade commander at that time? Can you remember?
Well, Chopitch was still there.
Yeah. And the divisional commander.
Well, again, I can't quote from. I can look it up in my record, but I don't, because you must, and this is important to appreciate, that the once you get below brigade or above brigade, you formations are meaningless to the average. Well, I was a political commissar, but they were meaningless to me, in the sense they were remote.
And at Botiti, you were commissar for the...
Yes, I was the commissar for the anti-tank.
Who was your immediate superior in the line, in the commissariat?
In the commissariat, now... it was already an American, not Dave Duran... Steve Nelson, who was a steel worker from Pittsburgh. He was a brigade commissar.
Had Aitken gone back to England by that time?
Yes, Aitken had gone back.
Yeah. Okay. And how long?
And so had Copeman, so had Bert Williams, and so had Jock Cunningham.
In fact, there was something rather unpleasant with Jock Cunningham, wasn't there? So I've heard when he got back to England, because he didn't come back out to Spain again.
Unpleasant isn't right the word. There you had four personalities who were strong personalities who were not able to adapt themselves to the rapidly changing political and military situation. Cunningham was an outstanding guerrilla fighter, if you like, but as the war became more organized, as the necessity for discipline isn't the word, but for more sort of coordination and less individual initiative, except on a small scale, he found it very difficult for him. There were clashes of personality between all those four leading people of the British.
Did Copeman figure in any of these clashes of personality? Or was he sort of...
Definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And how, before they went back to England, how was that manifested? Simply by arguments between them?
Yes, arguments and disagreements.
As to how the brigade, how the battalion should be conducted and so on?
Well, how the, not only the battalion, but the affairs of the relationship of the battalion to the brigade, and the role of the brigade in the whole of the military situation.
And yes, they all then went back, and in fact it was only Copeman and Tapsell who came back.
Yes. Yes.
Was he one of the figures of strong personalities who was disagreeing as well? Did he have a say?
Well, Tapsell had a... He was around, but Tapsell, who'd asked to go to Spain, had in fact been sent back to Barcelona to handle the problem of the ILP contingent there. And when a whole number of them of the group had been, if you like, gone to the Poom without understanding the significance, and after a period of political debate there whether or not they should come to the international brigades. But in fact, with the exception of four, all the ILP contingent went home.